Backstage Pass is made possible by Mauer Productions On Stage, supporting community theater in central New Jersey.
Hello, and welcome to Backstage Pass, central New Jersey's community theater podcast. I'm John Mauer, and I'll be moderating this session where we will become part of the world of art, just as art becomes theater in the Pinworth production of Sunday in the Park with George, being presented at the Kelsey Theater in West Windsor, New Jersey. How does one separate personal creative satisfaction from popularity? Can there be a balance between art and commerce as the artist tries to find his voice and reconcile his life with his art? These are some of the themes explored in one of the most acclaimed musicals of our time. Sunday in the Park with George is a moving study of the enigmatic painter George Seurat and is a deeply insightful and highly personal examination of life through art and the artist, about connecting and not connecting with the world around you. The original 1984 production won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, 2 Tony Awards, numerous Drama Desk Awards, and the Olivier Award for Best Musical. With me here to talk about the Pinworth production are John Zimmerman, Lori Gouger, and Lou Stallsworth. Hello, everyone.
Hey, John.
Good evening.
Okay, so Lou, what drew you to Sunday in the Park? Why did you want to do that show this year?
It's all about the passion, the dedication, the willingness to sacrifice everything in the name of the art. I think it's an emotion a lot of us respond to. I think a lot of our audience, a lot of the theater-going audience, understand the dichotomy of I want to do versus I choose to do. Anyone, what I, what you, what the rest of the people in the cast, the choices we've made to pursue a career instead of our art, that's a tough one. Most of us have made it. George Seurat, in this story, chooses to forsake all for his art. It's a passion that I envy, I admire, and it attracts me, it draws me, and I felt that way since the first time I saw a video of the show years ago.
Now, how would you draw the dichotomy between the fact that he is personally satisfied in his art and how he does it to the fact that he just has no life outside of that? I mean, can you feel for your art at the same time that you don't feel for anything else?
This character feels only for the art to the exclusion of everything. It's a choice that I don't think I've made. I don't know anyone who has made that choice. But in the fantasy of who I would be in a different life where different choices were available, it's a choice I think I would like to make.
Now, in the show, the two main characters, there's actually three main characters in this show. There's Dot, there's George, and then there's the painting. And we only have two of those with us today. But John Zimmerman, who
and
plays George,
wins.
Every time.
I lose.
So, John,
yes.
You are George.
Yeah, George is, actually. But yes.
George is, yes, the plural George.
Which should be explained.
Well,
okay, well, talk about the personal journey.
Absolutely. So this is a show that I first connected with when I was 15 years old, actually, in a summer theater program with Peter Demetz, who is our musical director for the show. I became fascinated with the show, the character of George, both the first act and the second act George. For those who don't know, George Seurat is only George in the first act. In the second act, it is another artist named George who may or may not be his great-grandson, who has different artistic problems than the first act George. It's not as complicated as it sounds when you see it on stage. What attracts me to these characters is the passion that Lou describes, and the choices that they make, either to ignore everything else or to take a step forward and try and embrace it. And I think what's interesting is it's not so much that he has nothing else going on in his life other than this painting, because he does have Dot. It's just that when push comes to shove, everything else loses every single time. It would almost be less tragic if he didn't have anything else going on. If he was asexual, if he was, you know, someone who had no interest in making any connection whatsoever. But the fact that he has that interest and still chooses the painting over these other people makes it all the more fascinating, all the more tragic, and for me, all the more identifiable.
So it's not so much the fact that he has nothing in his life but the painting, but the fact of everything, the losing everything else,
right,
giving up something that he had that was good for his art.
Absolutely. And in fact, this is something that I identify with when my wife and I have often had arguments where a show has won or being president of a theater organization has won, and it's been hard for her to take or hard for me to realize that I made that choice. And it's something that, like Lou, I don't often choose. I choose my wife and my kids and my job over my art. But I don't know if I envy or pity George. Probably a bit of both. But they're both, and I think that George probably feels that about himself as well. He doesn't know whether he should be living up to this ideal or not, but this is a choice he's made, and this is what he's going to do.
And actually, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's interesting because both Lou and John have referred to this idea of choice, and yet what I find so interesting about the character of George in the first act is it really doesn't seem to me that it is a choice. Mm. It's not a conscious choice. He is compelled against his judgment, against his instincts. He cannot pull himself out of the world of the painting as much as I think at many, many points he would like to. And I think that's where George as a character is so different from the four of us sitting here, in that we are making choices and balancing, and he is someone who is so compelled to live in a certain way that it ceases to almost become a choice for him.
Well, he can't choose if he wants it to be good, if he wants it to be what he envisions. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. It's about this vision he has. George always knew where he was going the minute he picked up the pen, is a line, or mm-hmm. the brush. And that once he chooses to pick it up,
right,
now it's the compulsion. Once he sees the park, once he sees the outline, now he's compelled to do it. And I think that you're right that it becomes this compulsion, but I do think there are moments in the show where he sees himself enough to know that I have to do this. It mm-hmm. might be I have to make this decision, but it's still him, I have to make this decision. I have to finish the hat.
And he knows the choices there, and he knows the ramification, including the line, will she be there? Will she be waiting for me tonight mm-hmm. after I finished the hat?
Right.
And the she in this is Dot,
yes,
who is the other side of this, the choice mm-hmm. he has to make between the personal life and his art.
Right.
And Laurie, you are Dot, so tell us something about Dot.
Well, almost his lack of choosing forces her to make the choice that George doesn't really go on a journey, it seems to me, through the first act. He's wrestling within himself, but the George that he is at the beginning, as much as he's trying to depart from that, he is essentially still the same George. And Dot is more of the roller coaster mm-hmm. ride that at the beginning of the show, I think she really looks at George as a challenge. And that's what she loves about him, that he is almost unattainable. She knows he's emotionally distant. She knows that the painting is his focus, but she really thinks, like a lot of women think, that she's gonna be the one to change him. And so that's really her focus at the beginning, is if I can just get him to look at me, if I can just get him to make a few concessions, that it's gonna be okay. And by the middle of Act Two, she's starting to turn to self-doubt, that maybe if I were prettier, if I were taller, if I were something that would hold his attention more. And by the end, when she finally comes to the decision to leave, I think she is realizing that, no, it's not him, it's not me, it's us. It's what I want is not the same as what he wants, and he is not gonna give me an inch, and so I need to move on.
There's a great line that Dot has that I think sums up their relationship so perfectly, where she says, George is complete by himself, mm-hmm. and she is unfinished. She needs someone or something else to complete her. And that's actually really where I identify with this character. And talking about choices, mm-hmm. I many times have felt complete when directing, when focusing on a project, and then having to step back and realize that I don't know whether that's a true sense or a false sense, but it's something that when I'm up there focusing on this painting, I can feel it. And I know what Dodd is saying in that moment, that that he can be content and complete to create this park and this work, and that that's something she'll never be able to understand fully.
Right.
Now, the thing is, where art is George's compulsion, artists are Dot's compulsion. As I remember in listening to it, she has said that she's been with many artists.
I think, well, I'd redefine that, the notion of with. She may have modeled. I don't get the sense of with as she has been with the father of her.
I think she's looking for something that is to her what the art is to him. And she's struggling to find what that something is until the moment that she, not to give away a critical plot point, but I think that she finds motherhood to be that moment for her, that that is, she has found what is her art.
In the beginning of the show, she's talking about if you want to be remembered, you need an artist. And by the end of the show, she is remembered not through art, but through children. And I think that's the big transition that occurs within her, that doesn't occur for George.
Now, George's whole story arc sort of travels across generations.
Mm-hmm. 100 years.
Mm-hmm. 100 years, two acts. Even though the whole story of self-discovery is happening for George, it's not the same George we start with.
Correct.
That finally gets that self-discovery.
Well, so this is something that Lou and I have gone back and forth about, is at the end of the show, which George is walking through the park with Dot, which George has found closure. And I think that it's the artist George, which is both of them combined. Act one, George connects with his art, can't connect with people to sell his art to have it be appreciated. Act two, George can connect with people, can sell his art, can be appreciated, can't connect to his art itself, and it's hollow and empty because of that. And it's only when they're combined and he accepts his heritage and everything that he can move forward. And I think it's ironic coming from Sondheim that that is the lesson, that you need to balance both. You need to embrace both halves to be able to move forward.
Well, and the thing that's interesting is even among the three of us who have been living this together for 5 to 6 months, what makes this such a brilliant show is obviously we all have very different ideas, and that's what makes this such an exciting show for an audience member, is that one person will see this show and it will affect them in one way. If you're someone who is an artist, if you're someone who appreciates art, if you're someone who's ever been in love, if you're someone who's ever felt that they were reaching out to someone and not getting what they needed, there's so many levels on which this show can be experienced and enjoyed, and that's what we really hope the audiences will come to enjoy.
I do fully expect that a portion of the audience by the end of Act One will completely side with Dot and will not
the ones who are right
and will not and will not understand why George is who George is. And there will be other people who will completely side with George and will not understand why Dot can't accept him for who he is. And there will be a lot of people in the middle who are weighing it in
and
shades of gray.
It will
spark
some conversations during intermission. Yeah.
The situation of she knew what he was like going in, so either accept it or move on.
Exactly.
Right.
Ooh, move on.
Yeah.
Should write a song.
That's a second act.
So. Oh, okay. Now, the third lead character in this is the painting itself. Mm-hmm. A very stylized, very particular. People know what that painting is. Probably more because of this show than anyone might have known about it before in popular culture. When you look at the painting, I mean, George in Act One is a singular person, self-obsessed about the work itself, and people are things to be painted in two dimensions.
Well, I think the other genius thing about this show is not just what the painting looks like, but the style of painting, that the gesture of the painting is mimicked perfectly in Sondheim's music. And that's, I think, what makes this such a special show, that it's not just the melodies, it's the fact that his artistic gesture is captured in the style of the music that Sondheim writes and the way that it is sung and the way that it's performed on the instruments.
Well, one of the big themes is light and color in the show, and that
and dark
and pointillism.
But that travels through when they talk about light, too bright, too dark, that kind of thing in the show.
Well, one of the things about the painting as a character is, so in the first act, it's the character that we never see, but we're introduced to. It makes its grand entrance at the end of the first act. And as George, I choose that it is going to be perfect. It is going to be a masterpiece that I am obsessed with, I'm sacrificing for, and I'm working on. So making that choice in the second act, knowing that it's a masterpiece, knowing that it's as close to perfection as one can get, it is now literally hanging over my head as second act George, that this is something that's unattainable, this is something I can't live up to, this is something that I'm supposed to be connected to, and I don't know if I want to be connected to it or not. What does it mean if I'm connected to it as an artist? And so this painting then becomes this very weighty thing that I don't know how to deal with as a character, that has a sort of connotation for the audience. Whether they think it's a masterpiece or not, it really can affect how they view the second act. And it's definitely palpable. It's definitely something that I think helps the audience connect into the show.
Well, and there's such a contrast between the art in the second act that is very contemporary and, right, and abstract.
Electric.
And we just went this weekend to the Museum of Modern Art, and it was so interesting to see, you know, things that have taken what George in 1983, is that the, when it
84,
was 83,
yeah,
84, that the things that he was doing and have gone way beyond that, where you're even led into the discussion of, is this art? You know, what is the definition of art? Whereas in the 1800s, George was pushing that boundary, but by common present day standards,
it's a classic.
Right. So that's, you know, there's also, aside from the love story and aside from George as a person, the second act is really very insightful and clever in terms of defining what is art.
Yeah, and I think even though it was set to be modern day in 1984, it is still very much of the current art scene and of what it takes to be an artist now in the world.
Money and connections.
And putting it together.
Amen.
And I want to jump in on one added point. We've been talking a lot about the story, the art, the passion. What we haven't really given any fair comment to is the music of the show. The melodies, the harmonies, the vocal beauty of the show. In rehearsals, I find myself pulling back and being bathed by the music. It will make your eyes wet. It is a creation of vocal beauty. I react to it strongly, emotionally, viscerally. Every time I hear John and Lori harmonizing, it's something that physically resonates within me. And I can't wait for people who don't know the show to hear these melodies the first time. And then if they can hear the lyrics, if they listen to the words, the absolute poetry that are these lyrics. I tend to wax poetic, but this is the show that has grabbed me. This is the production that we want to share with our audience.
One of the things I've noticed in listening to it and then reading up on the work that was done to produce it is that it's almost, for Sondheim, minimalist in the number of melodies, but how they are combined, the way that a painter would take a limited number of colors and make an entire palette.
Absolutely.
Musically, he has a limited number of instruments, a limited number of melodies, and he's creating a palette just by recombining them different ways.
Well, he's a very cerebral composer. He is not a composer that really leaves anything up to chance. Everything, every decision is thought through on an academic level, but then it's also very organic in a way that a lot of the more formulaic musicals or things with predictable harmonies or traditional, you know, 1950s musicals that you know what the melody is going to sound like. I think that's what makes Sondheim so unique among his generation, and even reaching further than that, among all musical theater composers, is that he is so brilliant in terms of the choices he makes, and yet he lets the characters and the lyrics really guide the melody and throws off the, you know, the shackles of the traditional constraints of the way that music is supposed to be composed.
Well, I think that's part of when you hear Sondheim, it's not easy to sing.
No,
it's not.
And listening to Sondheim, You know, it really, musicians who, you know, consider themselves to be musicians, I'm air quoting, which you can't see on the on the microphone, will really appreciate analyzing what Sondheim does so well. But non-musicians really can just appreciate the fact that it, as Lou is saying, it impacts you on such a visceral, emotional level, because it's not a cutesy little melody. It's raw and it's real.
I would argue that I think it's his best show, his best score, his best lyrics. I'm a pretty big Sondheim fan. I've directed some of his work. I've been in a couple of his shows. And I think it's because of where he was in his career, having come off a major failure with Merrily We Roll Along, ending a 6-show streak with Hal Prince, and then breathing new life, almost a third career, if you will, with James Lapine. And the two of them clearly were able to connect and integrate book and score and lyrics so well. It's impossible to tell what he wrote versus what James Lapine wrote. Mm-hmm. It just is integrated beautifully.
They were able to connect.
Yes.
In a way that George
is
not.
Yes.
Now, we've been talking about the music. We've talked about the painting, about the two of you. There was a full cast of people. This painting is made up of a full cast of people. No. Yes, there are other people in this.
People standing behind us while we're making art?
On that. And,
I'm drawing them the whole
and
time.
One of the things that has been mentioned about this, if you look at the original painting, disconnected as George was, nobody in the painting is looking at anyone else, interacting with anyone else. They're just sort of there. Mm-hmm. And do you feel, to some extent, that it's in the show, the other characters are sort of stereotypical, two-dimensional, in that, okay, that's the way he sees them. That's as far as George gets into to get his painting, or how do you feel about it? I'm seeing
a
lot of...
I think they all have two characters. They have mm-hmm. their actual characters, and then the way that George would like them to be in his vision of the reality.
Well, I think the brilliance of the piece is, so in the painting, no one's looking at each other. It's implying everyone's here in this park, and nobody's connected. But every single character, other than George and Dot, well, including George and Dot, is connected to at least two other characters mm-hmm. that boils into this end of Act One, almost like a telenovela kind of
right.
scene,
cacophony.
Where everybody chaos. Is so interconnected that it becomes chaos. And George has to separate them apart in order to allow the beauty to be seen.
Because real life is messy.
Right. And in George's mind, those interconnections, that three-dimensional aspect, it's too much. It's too much for the painting. He has to separate them out and choose the best side, cover the eye patch, cover, you know, turn somebody around, whatever you have to do to make it fit and be beautiful and make it a perfect park, because they don't live in a perfect park. They live in a very imperfect park where he doesn't get the girl and he doesn't get recognition and he dies penniless and,
sells a single painting.
And uncelebrated. Which I guess he was probably fine with, actually.
On that,
because he was artistically satisfied.
Well, but I think that I believe that the character in the show, and I don't know
the character in this show,
I don't know
is content with
the real
life.
George, but that in this show, if the painting is as good as he can make it and he succeeds, he can die happy. I will say this about all of the supporting characters in the show, because there are too many people to talk about specifically. Mm-hmm. This is a chorus of leads who, if you have seen other shows at Kelsey, at other theaters, you will recognize them as being the people who are usually standing in the front and singing. And they are doing brilliant work supporting the painting, supporting Laurie, supporting me, supporting Lou's vision. And it means that when one of us walks off stage, you don't instantly go, oh God, when are they back? Because now we have to deal with these people. You don't do that. You look forward to meeting these unique and interesting characters and having them fill out everything, which isn't always the case.
Now, there's a huge amount of depth in this cast.
Yeah.
In that, you know, there isn't a single person who isn't amazing in their own right and carrying their own weight and really working very hard to bring this material to life. And we're having a great time.
And to then, we have to give, gotta say, Peter DeMetz,
yeah.
our music
mm-hmm.
director, who is wrangling this crew
amazing.
With patience and, here comes that word again, with passion. One of the fun things is on any given night, if we are short a voice,
male or female,
Peter is there and he's carrying the note, and it's just another moment of beauty in the rehearsal process. And, Peter, terrific.
And to that end, I have to say it is kismet. It is very, I don't know, the stars aligned right that Peter and I met in this summer theater program, and the song that I sang the solo and played George was Sunday, end of Act One, and he was the musical director when I was 15 years old. I won't say how old Peter was at the time. He was not 15. But it's sort of ironic that, you know, now 18 years later, it's sort of come around, and here we are together again, and I'm singing Sunday, end of Act One, and he's playing. So it's pretty cool.
Do you know the magic words?
Well, there's several. There's order, design, those are always together. And there's composition, balance, tension, form, symmetry, harmony. Light, and harmony.
And if anyone wants to see the harmony of Sunday in the Park with George, performances for Sunday will be at the Kelsey Theater on the West Windsor campus of Mercer County Community College, and will begin on January 11th and run through January 20th. Tickets are $18 with discounts for seniors and students. Go to www.kelsey@mccc.org or call 609-570-3333 for further information and reservations. I want to thank my guests, Lou Stallsworth, Lori Gouger, and John Zimmerman for being with us today.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
For Backstage Pass, I'm John Maurer. Thanks for listening.